they are able to communicate. So if you be able to enlighten me in this area, I never tried with these stars, so I'm pretty much new into it. And doing it.
Okay. I hope Eric is listening. I hope he's available, because I think he has some knowledge on D-Star. I do not. And Eric first, KE2EJ, K2LIW.
Why don't you hold it for about 2 or 3 minutes? I'm in the middle of something.
Roger, Dodger. Mel, I bet you've got a little bit of smarts on D-Star. Is that true? K2KEY, K2LIW. Okay. Do we have... Eric is busy for the next minute or two. In the meantime, is there someone else who has some experience or some knowledge about D-Star? Give me your call letters right now.
D2YO.
Go ahead, Bernie. Wait for the beep.
Can't help with D-Star, but I can help with the repeater end of that. On the web, go to a website called MetroCore, MetroCor, and I believe it's .org. Hold on. Negative, it's .net. So go to MetroCore.net, and they are the repeater coordinator for the greater New York City area.
And I think you're saying that that coordinating might include D-Star information. Is that true, Bernie?
According to the FCC, a D-Star repeater is a repeater, therefore it goes through MetroCore.
Okay, that could be a pretty good lead. So hopefully you're going to get some information there, Wesley. Other than that, I think we have to wait until Eric comes back. And we'll stand by for KE2EJ. And if Eric doesn't come back in the next 30 seconds, then...
Okay, what was the question?
Okay, lots of information is required about D-Star, because Wesley would like to hook it up with a repeater at his desirable location in Queens, and he'd like to be able to connect between there and European amateurs. I may have the question a little bit out of context. Let me turn it over to Wesley to clear up the question. Wesley, wait for the beep.
November 23, you get November. And one part of the question was, is it still available to get the call sign and the permit for the D-Star repeater? In so crowded environment that we have right now, 150-something repeaters on 2 meters, 77 centimeters. The second question is the required hardware. I know that the best frequency is 1.2 gigahertz, and then it could be linked in 70 centimeters and 2 meters. That would actually give two benefits. One is for me to work with European stations, and another one, other ham radio operators to use it. Then there is another question. Hotspots. What in Poland amateurs are doing, they don't apply for anything, they just buy PCB boards from Hitachi, I don't know how to say it, and they create a hotspot, and then they extend this hotspot further. They don't apply for any call signs at all, it's completely legal. I'm trying to find out how it works. Back to you, Andrzej.
Okay, I'm not really the guy you want to be asking, because I'm not all that familiar with how the guys have their system set up here, but I know that, you know, if it's hooked up to the internet, that you have the ability to raise any other repeater that's part of a D-Star system that's interconnected, and you can direct it to wherever you want to go or to the individual user.
For the comment in this matter, it means I'm connecting to individual user, I'm an individual user, I register myself now. How do I then connect my radio that is in the car with that? Is it through the repeater? Is it through the hotspot? How it works? Do I have to apply for the licensing for the call sign? That's what I'm asking you. Or if it's through the hotspot, how this hotspot works? Could be extended, like a cell. Anyhow, enter it here.
I think it's possible that Eric... Eric got called away again. As you know, Eric is on duty at this time. And so I think a pledge drive is taking place. And as such, he's continuously busy, and that's got to dominate over over this. Looks like we don't have a lot of information about D-Star right now. Hopefully that MetroCorps.net will give us quite a bit more information. I'll bet you if we Google the word D-Star as a search word with Google or other search engines, there's got to be quite a bit of information about there. And it looks like this particular group of people may not be quite as smart on that subject as we'd like to be, Wesley. I think you've stumped the group that's present, which means you get a free dinner for you and your lady friend, because you stumped the so-called experts. And Mel is the man who handles all of those free tickets to a fine restaurant in Queens. A little bit of a joke here. Back to you, Wesley. N2XJN. Sorry, we don't know much more. K2RIW.
Okay. I am so thankful to guys, to your hospitality guys. Anyhow, I've learned a lot from TechNet and from the people that are here. And I believe that in order for you, for the group of fine people in New York and the area, they are listening to that, in order to not become an ignorant group of people to the new technology, that daily, you can check it in the internet, daily, 300 stations daily activate themselves in D-Star, and you have around 30 repeaters a month activated in Europe. 30 repeaters, one repeater a day. So that's what is happening right now. Now, if this group of people will only concentrate themselves on the normal issues, then we'll become the group of ignorance. Because sooner or later, it's gonna be like with the Econet link. Nobody knew about it. Now everybody used that. Am I right? And to explain.
Sorry, I got called away again. But you know, you can go to the D-Star website. They have everything pretty much laid out there.
And what is the URL on that one, Eric? Is it dstar.com.net.org? Over to you, Eric.
I don't know exactly. It's go to ICOM, or you can do a Google search for D-Star. There's so many sites.
And which brand of equipment is it? Kenwood, ICOM, Yaesu? Do they all have a D-Star option, or do certain ones favor D-Star? Back to you, Eric.
It's mostly ICOM. I don't know if Kenwood makes a D-Star. I know Yaesu doesn't. They have their own system. D-Star is actually developed by the Japan Amateur Radio League. And the J, if you read Japanese, I mean, they have an English site, but all the good information is in Japanese. So I would probably suggest do a Google search. I'm having DSL problems at the moment, so I can't give you a very specific answer.
Okay. This is Andrew Xian. I do very much appreciate. I'm very sorry that I picked up that subject, and it's just a little bit stopping the routine of the TechNet. But I believe it would be good if we start at least give some information instead of me going right now. I did research it already. There are many information how to use it, how to do it, and whatsoever. Now, it would be good to have a guru like Dick who actually say, okay, we have something new, we concentrate on this and that and this and that, but yes, we're going to slowly go into that. I think many people will find that interesting instead of, go and do it. And to exit.
Yeah, I think I hear your suggestion, Wesley, and that is to accept the new challenge. This is the new modern equipment, and we should become knowledgeable about it. And I'm not going to promise that I can do that. I'm spread pretty thin as it is right now. I'm a so-called retired person, but I work every day. And it looks like I'm going to be working for some time to come for a bunch of reasons. So I'm going to try to find out more about it, but I'm not going to make a lot of promises. Eric, if you're still there, to a person who knows very little about D-Star, and if you had to give a one-paragraph explanation, that it is a digital mode, that it carries data and voice, that it allows connection through the Internet or like IRLP, if you could give us a one-paragraph explanation of what D-Star is, because I don't even have that much information right now, I think that would be helpful. KE2EJ, if you're available. K2RIW.
And I'll give them some info.
Very quick. All right, real quick. You can think of it like time division multiplex in terms of the transmission standard. It's a digital standard. It allows, it actually sends packets, audio, I think it's ACPCM, or ADCPCM, I'm not quite sure, I don't remember exactly, where the audio is broken up into packets, and packets are sent. You're really sending packets over the air with it, and because it's packet-oriented like that, and it's identifying itself, if it goes into the Internet, you can literally put in somebody else's call sign and get connected to them. So you can think of it as an Internet with VoIP kind of thing over a little handheld unit. ICOM is the major manufacturer. There are little kits and stuff out there that you can hook up to your computer to get into the D-Star system. I can't think of the guy's name right now. Byron Electronics. He also makes the little APRS transmitters that you can put inside the little tin can, stuff like that. And it's just another form of data. It's not proprietary. The protocol is published, although there's been a lot of fights about it over the years. But now we're beginning to see other folks make stuff for it. So there you go, Dick. K2IW, K2J.
To SYL, comment. SYL, recognize. And we're going to pick you up right after Mel, K2KEY. Thank you for the thumbnail sketch there, Mel. I mean, Eric, I'm a little bit smarter now. Mel's going to make me a little smarter yet. K2KEY, go right ahead.
Hey, this is K2KEY. I comment, Eric said it's the primary pusher on D-Star right now. ICOM came out with a new radio called the ID-800. It's a D-Star format digital unit for voice and data communication, and it's got all the little gadgets in it, such as the call sign calling, 20 character text messaging, and position exchange business, all built in. I mean, I just perused over it. If you want to get, and they give up, actually, if you go to www.icomamerica.com, one word, icomamerica.com, and then type in ID-800, they tell you the whole operation of this thing and the D-Star system. In other words, they give you the whole education on D-Star, Dick, over.
Okay, sounds good. And maybe I'm going to consider that. Mr. S-L-Y. Start off with your full call and your name, and then your comment. Go right ahead. K2RIW. My name is Dick. Wait for the beep.
Question about what Mel said, WS1.
Okay, go ahead with that question now, Paul.
I don't hear your courtesy tone, but, yeah, Mel, ICOM, IC80, 80AD, is that what you said, the HT that they have?
It's not an HT. This is a regular, like a mobile unit. It's a 55-watt mobile unit type device. It's ID. I like an Ida. D like in David. ID-800. Over.
Okay, copy that. This one's the ICOM IC80AD. Alpha Delta. And it's a handheld transceiver. It's the one in the... in this month, December QST. I was just reading on, about it on page 40, and they had a lot about the D-Star as well. So, okay, you were saying 800. This is made by ICOM, so it's an HT.
If it's not an HD, again, it's a type of mobile unit. It's I like in Ida, I like in India, D like in dog, dash 800, call 800, ID 800, over.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're saying. When you first brought it up, I thought you were talking about the IC-80 AD, the one that's in this month's QST. But, yeah, okay, you're discussing a different radio. But understood. Anybody wants to read a little bit about D-Star, if you get QST, page 40, this month, December, and whatever Mel's mobile rig that he's mentioning. Back to you, Mel.
WS2. AC2SYL, Bill. Okay, yeah. Wesley first, and then Bill in that order. Wesley, you had a comment on this one. Go ahead.
November to X-ray, Juliet, November. Basically, what it is about, if I thought that I'm going to have around people that will educate me, but since we all educate ourselves, I can say something about it. Basically, what is going on is that you have either a handheld, or you have a mobile radio, or you have a base station. Oh, you always have 5 and you always have 9, no matter where you are. It sometimes becomes a little bit digitized when it is not very much coverage, but basically the coverage is much better, much wider than for the regular repeater. You have a far more better distance, longer distance from the repeater, and then you always hear the station good. Now, the second thing is, you are driving somewhere, and then you are able to choose particular country, particular city, particular repeater, and you will see the call signs of the people prior to approaching them. And then you can log into that particular call sign, not disturbing these people talking between themselves, and you can ask them. And apart from that, you can chat with them, you can send the data, and you can type. You can do three things at the same time. And that's why this is amazing. Now, Dick, I suggest you to go to the internet. There is a site, official, I believe, ICOM site, that will show the activity. You will be amazed how it grows. It grows something that is not to stop. Every day more and more and more. It even goes by hours, not only by days, by hours. How many stations are more active by hours, not by the days? Not talking about months. That's how it's rapidly starting. Now, the format was known in... Let me jump for a moment. The format was known before ICOM announced this technology to ham radio. It was in commercial market. That's why other companies decided that they want to do also this kind of product, but so far ICOM is trying to keep the priority because they make so much money in it. I've heard they made till now more money than all of the manufacturers around made from selling their transceivers. That's how much money they make. This equipment is extremely expensive. A simple, small radio. I don't remember the model number. It's $700, $800. Small radio. Then the one that is 800, ID-800, it starts probably about $900. Without the D-Star, it's an option only. And then you buy the option. So right now it's like a rapid boom on D-Star radio. I'm just asking you guys why this is so quiet in here in New York, center of the world. Back to you guys, center is here.
Joe recognized
the center of the world. Well, the New Yorkers think so, but I doubt it. They're not quite the center of the world. A lot of things happen in the world that doesn't happen in New York. But Joe's trying to correct that. Joe, you've got some more spots on D-Star, because we need a little more here. For B2RYY, K2RYW, wait for the beep.
Well, I don't know information more specifically on D-Star, but the gentleman ought to consider that there's other possibilities of communications around the world in the same kind of type of format, simply like what we're using right now, we're called IRLT. That lets you use a regular standard transceiver or a handy-talkie going into a node which is connected to the world via the internet, and the equipment is a lot less expensive than what you're talking about buying. That's another possibility to consider also.
Okay, I've been bypassing Bill quite a bit here, and Bill probably has something to say on the subject. KC2SYL, go right ahead, Bill. K2RIW, wait for the beep.
Thanks, Dick, and everyone else in the net. I have in front of me the ARRL repeater directory, 2008-2009 version, the pocket edition. And I was looking up D-Star, and there is on page 711, there is a listing, or there are listings for D-Star repeaters. Apparently the frequencies go from 2 meters to 70 centimeters to 1.2 gigahertz. And according to in this issue, there are no D-Star repeaters in New York or New Jersey. Whenever this was printed, the 2008-2009 edition. However, there is one in Connecticut in the Hartford area. So I just wanted to give you that information. And it also indicates the call and a sponsor for the D-Star repeaters. Back to Netflix. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Very good, Bill. That repeater in Hartford that is already set up for D-Star, why don't you tell us its call letters and or frequency? Go ahead.
Hartford and North Central is the master listing. It's in Bristol, B-R-I-S-T-O-L. The output is 448.3750. The call, W1IXU, and the sponsor is WA1IXU. Back to you.
That's amazing. So I think you're saying the call letters of the repeater is Whiskey 1 India X-Ray Uniform, and the sponsor is Whiskey Alpha 1 India X-Ray Uniform. Is that what you said?
Affirmative. Whiskey 1 India X-Ray Uniform is the call, and the sponsor, Whiskey Alpha 1 India X-Ray Uniform, according to the repeater, directory. And the frequency, 448.3750. Tone is minus, but there is no, the sign is minus, but there is no tone. And it's located apparently in Bristol, Connecticut.
I got some up info on that, Dick.
Go right ahead, Bill. Wait for the beep.
Hey, I just got the new ARRL repeater directory desktop edition. And the desktop, I'm looking under New York, Manhattan, D-Star 445.2750, D-Star. Call letters of the station, K2DIG, and the sponsor is DIG, Digger, LNGRP, DIGLNTGRP, DIGLNTGRP, that's the sponsor. Call letters again of the station, D-Star station is K2DIG, Dig, and they're here in D-Star in Manhattan, Dick, over.
That's within easy range of Wesley. How about that? You've got one in your backyard there, Wesley. And with the call letters of K2DIG, which stands for digital, of course. Sounds like a very progressive group there in Manhattan. 445-275. So there may be one within range of where you're right now. Back to you for any fill on that, Wesley. N2XJN, wait for the beep, K2RIW.
Anti-X-ray in. Okay. Yeah, I've heard about this in Manhattan. And knowing that the distance, it's much, much further than bigger than for the regular repeater, I was hoping that the one that is in Connecticut might also be somehow accessible. And that's why my question, the second question, was about the hotspots. Because it looks like people can create hotspots by simply buying a small devices. And it is not treated as a repeater. It's just a hotspot. I did not know exactly how it works, but this could be extended like a cell. And one repeater could cover much larger area. Also, another question that I did have is, I assume, but I'm not sure, that dozens of people can use the same repeater at the same time because it is digital mode. So at that point, they do not interfere with each other. I need to know whether this is false or is true. Back to you guys, and to the chair.
I'm not quite sure what you're asking. Is it false or is it true? Could you repeat that question for me, Wesley?
That multiple people could use the same repeater at the same time, not interfering one with each other. Back to you.
Okay. A little bit like the way the telephone system works. On two pieces of wire with the current telephone system, a lot of simultaneous conversations can take place. I think they call it the asynchronous mode, among other things. So, Mel, what do you think? Do we know enough about D-Star to know whether or not multiple conversations can take place on the same frequency without interference?
Oh, I started cruising over D-Star when I saw it, the article that they had in QST, and I think that it does have some kind of a multiple uses because, let me see, I'm looking at a picture now of the IC2820 D-stop. It has D-stop plus GPS plus dual band. It has a whole bunch of things, and if you look at the system, the way it's laid out on the panel, it's a full picture of it. It looks like it can do data positioning, GPS, G-WR, GMR. It all seems like it does this simultaneously, Dick. And it shows, in fact, you know, so much display on this new radio. The display is amazing how many different things, such as elevation and time and GPS heading and a compass heading and all the stuff that seems to be simultaneously, Dick, so I think it's going to do. Find yourself, here it is. Find yourself while working, doing several tasks with D-Star. So I think you may have something that may be able to do several tasks at the same time, Dick. Also, leave me a few minutes. We've got a little problem here. I came up. Go ahead, Dick.
2 RSO with info. And 2 RSO, go right ahead.
Good evening, Dick. K2DIG has a website, www.k2dig.org, which shows what's available on the Empire State Building. They're currently using 440 repeater, 70 centimeters, on the frequency that that Mel gave you. And also, they have a repeater for 1.2 gigahertz digital voice, but they also have a repeater for digital data. And yes, it is possible to access the repeater on multiple frequencies. I don't believe you could have more than one person or one station on at a time at any one frequency, but you can have someone talking sort of like a coarse band repeater, someone talking on 1.2 gigahertz to someone else at 440. These are all linked. This D-Star repeater in Manhattan is linked through gateways to other repeaters across the country. There's a special arrangement with one in New Jersey, and I believe that link is up all the time, and other links can be opened as needed. Again, go to their webpage, and you'll get a wealth of information from them. And to RSO, back to Ned.
Wesley.
John, good information, Frank. Thank you. Go ahead, Wesley.
I think, Gabe, you can do several tasks while you're on the conversation with somebody. Data, voice, chatting, typing. There is multitasking for one signal of yours. But at the same time, like a multiple telephone and multi-platform telephone by two wires, I believe the many stations could connect. I'm not sure. I don't know. But the thing is that there are thousands of stations in Europe, and not that many repeaters. You have the repeaters, but if you take a look at the map, but not as that many as the people at D-Star every day, every hour. And they are able to communicate, and they create hotspots without them licensing anything by themselves, just to extend the coverage of a typical repeater. How this works, I don't know, but I believe at least, unless somebody tells me, yes, this works only for one guy connected and blocking the repeater when he's talking to another person. But I believe a few people could use it at the same time. It is good to find out, because sooner or later it's going to be the same story in New York like it's in Europe. It's not going to be like everybody is adding the D-Star by month. It's going to be by an hour. Back to the other chain.
The info and to RSO.
Great, Frank. And we're going to have to cut this subject off pretty soon, because we've got to go over to something that Mel desires. Over to you, Frank.
Hey, I'll make it short and fast. What Wesley is talking about, I believe, is the fact that you can transmit voice and data on the same frequency at the same time. As a matter of fact, you don't even have to identify by voice, because in order to access the repeater, you have to program your transceiver with MyCall, M-Y-C-A-L-L, which is your call sign. And that is sent through the system automatically every time you press you push the talk switch. And Wesley is right as far as Europe is concerned. There's a website, one of the J Find You websites for D-Star that will show all the stations that are connected to the network through the internet, the gateways throughout the world. And, yeah, they're all over the place, and they continue to increase exponentially each week and probably each day. Okay, back to you, Dick, and continue with Mel and to RSO.
I got some information, Dick.
Go ahead, Eric.
Interestingly enough, I'm actually educating myself here. There's a Wikipedia entry all about it. And basically, it says D-Star transfers both voice and data via digital encoding over 2 meters, 70 centimeters, or 23 centimeters. D-Star voice protocol standard, the audio voice is encoded as 3.6 kilobit data stream using a proprietary, AMBE encoding, which I don't know what that stands for, but I'll tell you in a minute, which 12 kilobits, 1.2 kilobits of FEC, leaving 1.2 kilobits for an additional path between radios utilizing the digital voice mode. On-air bit rate for DV is 4.8 kilobits over 2 meters, 70 centimeters and 23 centimeters. In addition to DV mode, a high-speed digital data mode can be sent at 128 kilobits, but only on 1.2 because of bandwidth. a higher rate proprietary data protocol currently believed to be much like ATM is used in the 10 gigahertz link radios that they make from site to site. So from what I'm reading here, one transmitter hogs the receiver. You're not going to split it up between two transmitters and one receiver, although you can transmit voice packet data and data data at the same time, but then again, it's all in the same stream. So, and they go on with the list of criticisms. My buddy Bruce Perns, who used to be at the Computer Graphics Laboratory, he's K6BP, he's very much an open source advocate, has announced that he will investigate the development of an alternative codec because the codec was developed by the Japan Amateur Radio League with money from the Japanese government. So, there you go. If you go to Wikipedia and put in D-Star protocol, you get all this stuff. Interesting reading.
And there are a couple of hotspots that are going to open up shortly in Nassau County. I believe there are at least one or two ARIES members who are working on that project right now.
Wow. How'd you find that out, Frank?
I'm a member of ARIES. And I'm also on D-Star.
Oh. These ARIES guys. Don't let any grass grow under their feet. Okay. Looks like you've gotten into a good subject here, Wesley. Got to go over to Mel now. Mel, I know we're getting awful far behind in the mail, but I think these are fairly important subjects we've discussed tonight, which I think involve life and death. That without people given forewarning about this situation, the chances of doing the right thing are very, very slim. So, to me, that's very important. I'm still very disappointed that the mass media is not giving sufficient coverage to this. K2KEY. Go right ahead, Mel. K2RIW.
Okay, this is K2KEY. Yes, it was a very important subject and has to be covered, even though maybe a little out of scope of amateur radio, but as you say, it means life or death, so definitely we had to cover it, and maybe if it helps anybody out there that's listening to us, well, sure worth the time. What happened? If you remember a few weeks ago, let's refresh your memory, somebody came on and asked that if they buy a new digital linear amplifier that they automatically will be able to, because it's the amplifier is automatically tuned, does that mean that they don't have to use an external tuner? And we came back last week because I did get a number of these questions. Some of the linear amplifiers, as I said, do have a built-in automatic tuner. But the bottom line is that we decided to say that if you're using a tuner right now to get your antenna to work on that particular frequency, you'll have to continue using some kind of a tuner, whether it be automatic or a manual tuner. However, you said that you can modify the antenna so that you don't have to use a tuner, and so it came in on the deluge, Dick. How do you modify this antenna? How do you modify commercial antennas? I mean, these are antennas, you know, you buy and you assemble them from the box. They tell you how to adjust this and this. How do I make it work now on this part of the band when they tell you that they're supposed to use a tuner? You said you know how to modify them, so it's all yours, Dick. Over.
Yeah, it looks like I've opened up a can of worms. However, whether I give you the exact information as to how to modify your antenna is not quite what Mel and Dick volunteered. However, what we are volunteering is a basic piece of information, and that is the physics of an antenna is such that within reason, any antenna at your particular favorite frequency, I didn't say at all frequencies at once, and maybe it's not all bands at once, but at least at one frequency on one band at a time. Essentially, every single antenna can be impedance matched. Mel gave us a lecture on this exact subject about how to use a stub tuner with a T connector and 30 cents worth of coax cable put in the right position, and the piece of stub coax cable made the right length, you can correct the impedance of essentially any antenna.
I'm going to put a slight limitation on this. If your antenna starts off with a standing wave ratio greater than 10 to 1, there's something more basic going on that you ought to find out about. But if you've got an antenna that gives your particular transmitter a lot of grief, and most of these modern-day no-tune transmitters run into a lot of grief beyond about a 1.7 to 1 standing wave ratio, and your antenna is sitting at 2.5, can you bring the 2.5 down to 1.1 with one single stub of the right lens in the right location? Absolutely yes. So, inexpensively forcing an antenna in the shack to be a good impedance match, even the right solution, let me drop it. The most desirable solution, if you know how, if the manufacturer of the antenna has given you enough information, the most desirable position place to correct the condition is right at the source, right at the antenna itself. If there are tuning stubs and tuning adjustments and lengths of the radiating section or whatever, if there are adjustments and modifications that can be made at the antenna to make its standing wave ratio a nice low number, like 1.1, that's the most desirable place to do it. If you think you don't have that capability, and if your transmission line is reasonably low in loss, so that doing the correction in the shack is a reasonable thing to do, then by following the directions that Mel gave us in that lecture, and that lecture is now in a can, so to speak, I'm pretty sure that lecture is on the website, amateurradio.tv. Amateur Radio, spelled together with no punctuation, AmateurRadio, the R of amateur and the R of radio are run together, .tangovector. You go to that website, and you go to the CANS programs that are there under the TechNet. One of those CAN programs is how to use a Smith chart, and one of them is how to set up a stub tuner. I think it was combined with Smith chart. So when it comes to the technique, I didn't say it's super easy. There's a learning curve here. There's an education requirement. But once you know that it's possible, and once you educate yourself, for an extremely small amount of money at least one frequency at a time, you can, in the shack, force your antenna electronically to be a nearly perfect match so that no further antenna tuning is required on that frequency. There are techniques of making the process even broadband. I'll warn you, those are a lot more complicated. But at least one frequency at a time, by following that lecture that Mel gave us already, and maybe it's time for a slight refresher on that, there is a procedure, know that it's possible, that puts you on the route of studying the problem, finding out how to do it, and therefore doing it, and taking the pride that, aha, I corrected my antenna, and I didn't have to buy that $300 antenna tuner. I did it with 50 cents worth of hardware. There's a lot of pride in doing that. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Yeah, Roger, this is K2KEY. Well, the Smith Charts series that we did cover stubs and how to go ahead and, as you say, make a matching section up that will satisfy the situation of for that particular band or that frequency and how to go about it, basically using that Smith chart, which I did get a lot of feedback on that thing. People said that they have the whole series of Smith charts laid in front of them, that because I took approximately every kind of, you know, normal situation that you would want to, you know, application in amateur radio for the Smith chart, and they have made copies of them, and, you know, they've actually followed along, and they use the chart. All they do is substitute, you know, different frequencies in or different circumstances, but, you know, the mathematics and the procedure is basically the same. However, what they want to do is, these are antennas like vertical, the things that the manufacturer tells you that you set it up a certain way, and they tell you, you know, you can't go ahead like the antenna that we have down the block here, my friend with the gap and all. You can't do any alteration on that antenna. They tell you anything, if you don't follow to the letter of the law, it's not going to work. So in a case like that where it's multi-band antenna and you do need a tuner to use it because they tell you, you know, the bandwidth decreases as you go lower in frequency, and they tell you where you need the tuner. In this case, even though you buy a linear amplifier with a that's an auto tune, you know, basically tune, you know, in other words, you don't have manual tuning on the amplifier. If it doesn't have a built-in tuner and you need it as a tuner, this is the bottom line. You're still going to need some kind of tuning device stick over.
In order to cover a whole lot of different frequencies where you want to be able to QSY, change frequency, and still have the antenna be low in standing wave ratio, a sophisticated approach to doing that is a either manual or automatic antenna tuner, because very few antennas are a very good impedance match across a full band or a good impedance match across multiple bands. A good antenna tuner will handle that situation. But you have a choice. You can either write the check for the expensive antenna tuner, or you can choose to educate yourself as to how to do it at least at one frequency at a time. And there's ways you can make an automatic switch mechanism that throws in stub number one when you're on the low end of the band and throws in stub number two when you're high end of the band. There's a lot of value in learning to educate yourself as to how to do antenna tuning. For those who don't know it, I run a consulting business, an electronic engineering consulting business, for the last 9 years. 95% of all of my clients have me designing antennas with a particular impedance match every day of my life. When I'm working, with rare exception, I am doing impedance matching of antennas. I'm doing the equivalent of building stubs and LC networks and whatever, and electronic circuits to tune antennas to an extremely low standing wave ratio. You guys, most of our rigs, let me drop. Most of our rigs will be happy if the standing wave ratio is below approximately 1.7. I am, as an occupation, day in and day out, coming up with techniques and patents. My name is on quite a number of patents over the last few years, like more than 15 patent applications. Something like 6 or 7 of them have already been issued, and some of them are already commercial products that are being manufactured. But in that my particular application, the antenna must present an standing wave ratio well below 1.1, like 1.05, across the whole darn frequency band of operation. I didn't say it's easy. All I'm saying is that if you develop the skill to do antenna tuning, it's a little bit of a rare art, and it's got an educational curve. But if you learn the skill to do that, and you properly advertise that skill, people will beat a path to your door, and they will hand you money. I'm only exaggerating slightly when I say that. Because the schools do a rather poor job of teaching that skill, it has become a rare black art. And many manufacturers of wireless equipment must have a good antenna. Therefore, they've got to hire people that have the skill of doing antenna tuning. If you decide to devote the next couple of months of your life to learn that skill, guarantee you will be very happy at some time downrange that you did it. In my mind, it's an extremely valuable skill. Wireless products, you can't get enough of them, don't work without antennas. The antennas don't work well without impedance matching, and impedance matching is a skill that's got to be learned. Once you learn it, it's not that bad. But the way it's taught is so poor that the first few steps of learning will seem difficult. It doesn't have to be. You've learned that skill, Mel. What did you have to go through, other than lots of years of experience, like I did, to learn it? And I bet you could teach somebody real fast now that you know how. K2KEY,
K2RIW. This is K2KEY. It's like you sort of grew up in it bit by bit, and basically hands-on experiences. No substitute, and it takes a lot of hands-on experience. All right, but the bottom line is, let me make it clear to everybody. If you're using some kind of tuner right now in the line, you have to either when you put the linear amplifier, it does not have any magic. I don't want to hear that this linear amplifier does not have to be tuned. It doesn't mean it's going to tune your antenna the way you tune it is, unless the amplifier specifically says built-in automatic tuner. That's only on the high-end solid-state amplifiers. So you have to have a tuner right now, because a lot of them said, well, we have bought tuners, you know, that were rated at like 250 watts for a regular 100-watt transceiver. You know, what do? You mean we can't use that tuner with an amplifier? Well, you're going to go to an amplifier that's going to produce, say, 10 times the power. Of course not. You can't use that tuner. And unless you're going to, if you're going to just buy a linear amplifier just to go from 100 plus watts or so up to maybe 200 watts, 250 watts, it don't pay for the investment. So this is what I wanted to get straight, Dick. And many people, yeah, you're right, many people, would you believe that were in this so-called industry or ham, did not know how to use that Smith chart, because when I showed them my series that I did, and I explained, and they looked at it, and all, they said, oh, wow, never did this with it or that with it. They are using it. A couple of them said, why don't you write a book, you know, continue. I said, I covered most of the subject. I'm just not the person to sit down and write a manual on the Smith chart, Dick. Go ahead.
No, you shouldn't. Be it known that there are a couple of freeware computer programs that will do Smith chart calculations and Smith chart plotting and Smith chart-like corrections of an antenna. LC is one of them. ELSEE, I think, is the way it's spelled, but there's a program called LC. It is freeware, which will do plotting and correcting of impedance matching on a Smith chart. So learning a Smith chart, learning impedance matching, gives you the ability at the kilowatt level, if you want to do very simple compensation.
At 830 W2VL repeater system.
We'll do very simple impedance matching, even at the kilowatt level. And therefore, do you have to buy a higher power tuner? And I'm going to reiterate what Mel said. Just because you've got a high power amplifier that claims it's no tune doesn't mean you suddenly can bypass the tuner. We're at the bewitching hour. This was TechNet number 1,274. On the assumption we stay healthy, Mel and I will be back next week covering more of these same subjects. And it's worth the investment to learn how to do antenna tuning. Be kind to each other. Bye-bye for now. Over to you, Mel. K2RIW, clear but listening.
Just say goodnight, and we'll try to do it again, as Dick said, next week. 73 to all. This is K2KEY.
Dick? Yes, sir? Oh, you like it.
AMBE stands for Advanced Multiband Excitation. And here's the bad thing about it. It's actually developed by a guy at MIT in 1967, and a group of guys in 1988 founded a company called DVSI, and they manufactured the chips. That's why the codec is proprietary, and it's currently used by Inmarsat Iridium, you know, satellite telephones, used on XM satellite radio. It's the speech coder for open sky trunk radio systems. And it says that AMBE is used in D-Star, and it's met criticism because of the nature of its patents and licensing run, which runs counter to the openness of amateur radio. So that's why all the hoofla. Anyway, it requires a license from Digital Voice Systems Incorporated, and it's not open system. That's why a lot of people yelp about it.
Interesting. AMBE, Advanced Multiband Excitation. And among all those other places, it's used on Inmarsat. And a significant number of people are alive today because they had an EPIRB or some other kind of signaling device that worked through Inmarsat, and it helped the first responders to find them in the middle of a vast ocean while they're floating around and hollering Mayday, or wishing they could holler Mayday. So, valuable tool. And I guess you're saying lots of people are wishing it was open source. Even if it is patented, I wonder how many years that patent has been running. It probably will run out in 17 and a half years from the beginning. And unless all kinds of codicils are added to it, at that time, I think it becomes public domain. Back to you, Eric.
K2RW, K2J. Well, you figure 1988 is still got a little while ago yet, and of course it's been advanced since that. There's AMBE, AMBE Plus, and AMBE 2. But anyway, the significant part about it, it's a code book-based vocoder that operates at bit rates between 2,000 and 9,600 bits per second, sampling rate of 8 kilohertz at a 20 millisecond frame. Audio data is usually combined with 7 bits of FEC, producing a total RF bandwidth of approximately 2250 hertz, as compared to 27 to 3000 for a single sideband. Lost frames can be masked by using the parameters of the previous frame to fill a gap. The same thing we do in video. But,
reflector, 9.26.
Knowing Bruce is actually, Bruce graduated from MIT with a degree in engineering, a degree in computer science. He's a doctorate of mathematics and a doctorate of physics. And he's a real freak. He's a good friend of mine.
Sounds to me like you collect some pretty crazy people. Boy, I don't know. I don't know if I want people to know that Dick's a friend of Eric's. I'm going to go slow on that one. Collect some wild characters. I've got to go. Sounds interesting. Bye-bye for now, Eric. And I think the machine timed out again. K2RIW.
No, it didn't time out. The machine itself now is recycling it. At 3 minutes after 12, it disconnects from the ILP and does a little cleanup and then hooks up again. But we have that wacko out there in Suffolk County. I disconnected the machine a couple hours ago because I don't like hearing his filth. So have a nice sleep and a good day tomorrow. K2RIW, K2J.
I'll take just one comment from me, Wesley, Interactive. I think that a lot of people like me, including me, would like to invest their own money just for the benefit of other people. And it would be good if the next net could just explain how to create these hotspots to enable other people to use D-Star if they want to. And it would be much better, much clearer communication that we have right now. Thank you. Thank you very much. Have a good night.
Sounds like we're going to be discussing that subject again next week. See you then, Wesley. Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Dick. KC2SYL, good night.
Good night, Bill.
I'm going to try and experiment with you if this works. This should be the most recent version of the amateur radio news. Let's see if I can get this to go. K2J.
Amateur Radio Newsline report with the release date of Friday, December 4th, 2009, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. The FCC says it's finally time to codify the vanity call sign system. More waivers granted by the FCC for employers to use ham employees in rescue radio drills. UK hams stand ready if a bridge falls, and Ireland's National Ham Radio Society gets an unexpected gift. Find out the details on Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1686, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now from Charleston, West Virginia, with Jim Dameron, NATMW, I'm Jeff Clark, KHJAC. The FCC has issued a notice of proposed rulemaking titled WT Docket 09209 that seeks to amend the Commission's amateur radio service rules. This is to clarify certain regulations and codify existing procedures governing the vanity call sign system. It would also revise certain rules applicable to club stations. Bruce Tennant, K6PZW, reports.
According to the FCC's November 23rd,